Welcome to the Global Sales Leader Podcast, where we unravel the intricacies of success in an ever-ending, evolving realm of sales, sales leadership, psychology, and so on and so forth. I'm your host, Jason Cooper, and today's episode promises an engaging dialogue with Eduardo Brancinso, alumni in the field of growth mindset, high performance. This is all what I'm about, so always excited about this. In this edition, we navigate the essential components of constructing top-tier sales teams with a keen focus on convergence of mindset, learning, and performance. Eduardo always sheds light on the pivotal role of psychology and psychological safety within teams, underscoring the imperative open communication and culture. And we speak at whatever levels of knowledge it takes to be a high performer within sales. You're going to love this. Hello, good morning, good evening, and good afternoon. And wherever you are in this wide, wonderful, beautiful world, you are very welcome to the Global Sales Leader Podcast, where we dive deep into strategies, insights, and stories shaping the world of sales leadership. I'm your host, Jason Cooper, and today we have a truly exceptional guest joining us in a few moments. Eduardo, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Jason?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm absolutely flying today. I feel really good. So today, Eduardo is one of our experts in the field of human performance and co-founder of Mindset Works. Eduardo, groundbreaking work has been guiding from the force of leaders worldwide, and his books, including The Human Performance Paradox, which I have here and I read, and I bought at Dublin Airport quite recently, and I was fascinated. It just stood out amongst the other books, and I thought, I'm going to have to deep dive in there. And I loved it from the first couple of words, and I thought, I'm going to have to get hold of Eduardo. And ironically enough, I'm already connected with you. So today we're going to be exploring each different facet around performance. So a little bit about Eduardo, and I'm nicking this from his website. Two types of superhuman powers: abilities to learn, collaborate, which we all know. As kids, we are naturally curious. And my kids are already naturally curious, a bit too curious for my liking sometimes. And they experiment all the time. So Eduardo, rather than me talking about you, give us a little bit of an introduction about you and how you got into this area, because I'm fascinated about this.
Sure, yeah. Like a lot of kids, like you're saying, I was very curious before I got to school. And when I got to school, actually a lot of my curiosity was extinguished. You know, I was sat on the chair and talked at about things that I didn't care about. And I think a lot of times in school, we start associating learning with things that are boring and not relevant. And so it took a long time after I graduated and started working for some time to really reconnect with how much learning can contribute to our lives in terms of improvement in whatever we care about, whether it be sales or our relationship with our friends or spouses. But I basically got into the habit of doing what other people expected, what my teacher expected, what my bosses expected at work, and not really cultivating any interests of my own. And after several years of doing that, I got sick. I got a repetitive strain injury, and I realized, you know, like if I look ahead 10 years, 20 years, do I really want to be doing what I'm doing right now, but 10 years further out? And for me, the answer was no. So I went back to grad school to figure out a different path where I felt like I could actually be doing something that I felt was making a difference to somebody else. And over there, I met a Stanford professor by the name of Carol Dweck. She wrote a book called Mindset. And we co-founded this organization you mentioned, Mindset Works, which helps schools foster cultures of learning, or growth mindset cultures, as we call them. And after over a decade doing that, my job started becoming more and more public speaking, first around school districts. Then lots of companies wanted to build a growth mindset culture. And I had a background in investment banking and venture capital, and I have an MBA. So I migrated more to helping organizations build cultures of learning and high performance. And that's what I do now. And, you know, with Carol Dweck's mentorship for over 16 years and just helping organizations figure out how do we create a culture where we are experimenting more, having more honest conversations, talking about what we want to learn, how we're going about it, the mistakes we're making, so that we can increase our skills and performance faster and reach our goals faster as well. So I wrote this book, The Performance Paradox, recently to share some of the things that I've learned throughout that journey.
So from the stuff that I've read even before that, a lot of psychological safety is involved within it. The people that your team's performance is all about being in a safe environment and learning by mistakes and having the tools around them and giving people the ability to actually go out and maybe fail forward if that's the right approach and being able to do that from what I've seen. So a lot of that from what I've seen, especially in sales and sales teams, I think they have to have some sort of buy-in there. They've got to be bought into the process and they've got to have that mindset behind that. So how would you describe that? Because I'm curious from your thoughts and background on, number one, how to get the buy-in, but then how to help their mindset grow within that.
Sure. Yeah, psychological safety is a really important component. Psychological safety is when we feel safe to share our thinking with other people. Often we are afraid of appearing incompetent or appearing like novices or hurting other people with our honest thoughts about observations that we have that might be opportunities for their improvement or ideas that they might not like. And so when we share our thinking, we become smarter as a team because we are sharing different perspectives from different vantage points, from different skills that we have, different backgrounds. And so when we're honest with each other, we can both increase our learning and therefore also increase our performance. So to do that, to create, but psychological safety is necessary, but not sufficient. I mean, people can feel safe, but kind of complacent or safe, but not interested in improvement. And so we need also to connect with a sense of purpose and why do we care? Why do we care about improvement? Why do we care about performance? And so that all involves creating a culture of a team and in the organization, both kind of, so the culture and also the mental models internally as individuals, but the culture is about getting clarity about how do we want to behave with each other? Do we want to do what I think in a lot of organizations happen, which is everybody's trying to look smart and to prove that they are excellent already, rather than also work on improvement. Like an Olympic gold medalist will be best in the world, but they will continue to improve. They'll ask for feedback. They'll experiment and talk about, hey, this movement that I'm doing it doesn't feel quite right. Do you have any ideas for what I could do differently? So we want to have those conversations at work. And for that, we need clarity about how we want to behave with each other, what systems and habits we want to use for performance, but also for learning and for improvement. You know, what are we going to do in our weekly meetings? Is it all about doing the best as we know how? Or are we also going to be doing things that are going to push us beyond what we know, that are going to increase our skills or our understanding of customers? And so that kind of framing and setting the stage is really important. Creating the systems and habits for performance and learning is really important. And then modeling learning is really important because often as sales leaders, we feel like we should have all the answers and that we kind of act like know-it-alls, even if in private, you know, I'm listening to, you know, Jason Cooper's podcast because I want to learn as a sales leader. When I'm in front of my team, I might present myself as a know-it-all. So then they will emulate those behaviors. They will behave like know-it-alls too. And so we need to be transparent and model visibly and explicitly the behaviors that we want to see in others.
Yeah, I think a lot of that spans around trust. And you mentioned transparency. And I think transparency is absolutely core. It's also being vulnerable in those sort of states as well, really saying, look, I don't know it all. As a leader, I got you guys in the room because you've got a diverse team here. Each one of you are special in your own individual way. You all have incredible ideas, but we've got to allow it to come out of you. And you've got to feel that it's okay to be okay to speak up. As they always say, it's a bit of a cliche thing. There's no such thing as a bad question. But, you know, if you say it, you know, that's okay because we're all safe, even if you say the wrong thing. But at least if you do that Marshall Goldsmith thing, which you feed forward and you learn from that, so the next time you do it, you've learned to improve on it. Something else that I'm really curious about is self-accountability, because from the stuff that I've researched on and being self-accountable for your own actions, meaning rather than having a lot of L&D around me and a lot of being told to go on courses and all of that, but, you know, picking up books that haven't been pushed on you, picking up a course that haven't been pushed on you, and all of that. So what's your take on that, especially within sales, like, oh, things are not going so well this time? What's your take on self-accountability for that growth area?
Well, one thing that I think you touched upon is the difference between improvement or learning reactively or responsively versus proactively. And I think it's both are really important. So we want to make our own change the default. What are we doing on a daily basis that is making our continued change and improvement the default? What are our systems and habits to do that? And whether it is reading, like you're saying, or, you know, experimenting or researching competitive products or getting smarter about our product or customer needs, whatever it is, what are the things that I'm doing on a regular basis? And there's research that shows that the salespeople who have those types of habits, sell more than other people. And so some of those things can be things that are time fully dedicated to learning, like reading a book or taking an L&D course. But some of those things are very much embedded into our work, like, you know, getting feedback from prospects or customers after we speak with them, or, you know, shadowing colleagues and sharing and debriefing afterwards. Those are things that can be embedded into performance, just like, you know, athletes do when they review their videos or when they are thinking about how they're going to approach their next performance. So that's one thing that you touched upon. You also touched upon trust, and trust is really important. Because when we are transparent with each other, that information could potentially be used against us if in different ways. Like, maybe if I ask a colleague for feedback, maybe they think that feedback is something that only people with low ability need, so they might think less of us, right? And so we might need to re-explain and set the stage for what feedback is and why we want to be soliciting it all the time. So sometimes to build trust, we might need to take smaller risks up front, see how other people respond, and gradually go deeper and deeper and share more and more over time until we're in a very transparent place. You also talked about vulnerability, and to build trust and to build transparency, we need to get vulnerable. But eventually, vulnerability is not the goal. You know, eventually we might get to a point where we can be transparent without feeling like we're open to harm, because we know each other so well. We know that we want to be sharing with each other. And so I can feel safe with you while sharing transparently. And that means I'm not vulnerable. I'm just very transparent. So the important thing is to be transparent, whether or not we feel vulnerable.
Yeah, I like that. I really like that. Part of your book that I read, and it is a perspective, and I think you've just touched on some of those areas when you go into the learning zone before you get into the growth zone, and then there's other steps along the way. I'm really curious to hear your perspective, and how can salespeople or sales managers, sales leaders, they're all three different types there, get on board with that and get into that performance zone or the learning zone, and obviously that growth zone afterwards. I'm curious about, we touched on a few of the areas, but what other areas? Because I'm curious about helping people, and especially people listening to this podcast now, and giving golden nuggets of knowledge so that they can just take that first bite-sized chunk to actually excel themselves forward?
Sure. So what I started working in this area when I started working with Carol Dweck, who coined the term growth mindset. And growth mindset is the belief that we can change. Because in order to improve, we need to change. And we can't, we won't do the things needed to change and to improve unless we believe that we can.
Yeah.
That's necessary, but not sufficient. In addition to that, we need to know how to change and how to improve. And often we have, we're confused about that. Often we're thinking that the way to succeed and what we're supposed to do at work every day is simply to work hard, to work as hard as we can. And that's the way to improve and to succeed. And what we're not clear about is that there's actually kind of two forms of effort. One is effort to perform and to execute, and the other is effort to improve. So those are what I call the performance zone and the learning zone. And in order to improve, we need to not just work harder, we need to be deliberate about improvement. So what does that mean? You know, if I might be trying to maximize my sales for this week or for this quarter, I might just come to making as many sales calls as possible, just trying to execute, just trying to, you know, work on the leads and try to close deals. And that's fine. That's important. But that's the performance zone. If we just do that, we're going to stagnate. We're not going to grow our effectiveness over time, because we're not going to find new strategies and new ways to communicate, new sources of leads. And so in order to get more results done over time in the same amount of time, we need to do something else, which is to go beyond what we know, right? Whether it is researching in kind of with coaches or podcasts or books, or whether it is spending more time with customers, trying to discover where they're coming from or what their unmet needs might be, or getting smarter about our products or of competitive products or of market trends or sales techniques. Those are things that are different from just picking up the phone and making as many calls as possible. So that's what I call the learning zone. And so we need to figure out what are my systems and habits to perform, which are really important, but what are systems and habits to learn in the learning zone? And then we can blend the two in what I call learning while doing, because sometimes we use this term learning by doing, but we don't actually learn just by doing, by executing. We need to be deliberate about it. But we can learn while doing, because we are, you know, we might be taking on challenges, going after customers that are a little bit different than we have in the past to see if those work or don't work, experimenting a little bit with how we approach a conversation. And those are ways to both get things done, but also improve along the way. In order to do that, we need to change a little bit what we do and experiment, rather than just approach each day and each customer in the same way.
Something that crossed my mind as you were speaking, and you touched a little bit upon it, but you know, with our athletes, they get to a place where they get peak performance, which is the top 2% of the 2%, where they just rise up to the next level. I'm just curious about how we can get up to peak performance, whether we're in sales or we're developing ourselves for the future. What needs to happen? I know there's a thing called energy management and certain points of the day that you're better at working on certain things than other things. But I'm curious about, just for selfish reasons here, but obviously, but how do we get up to peak performance? Like the top 2% of the 2%? How do we get up there? That's where I need to be.
So first, personally, and this is a personal opinion, I know peak performance is a common term and it's a powerful term. It's not a term that I love, because at the peak, it seems to me you can't get further, you can't improve further. If you're at the top of a mountain, it means that you're at the top. You know, if you move a little bit to the left or the right, you decrease. Growth mindset is the belief that we can always improve. And so in my work is about how do you get to as best as you can, but how do you get even better, right? How do you continue to improve? Now, to your point about, to me, what peak performance means is, given your current ability, your current skills right now, how do you execute at that level, at the top level that you're capable of right now? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so how do you get, whether it is in a state of flow, or to your point about, you know, at the time of the day that you operate at your best, or, you know, you might be preparing, like athletes listen to music or get into an emotional state before a performance so that they are at that top emotional space to show up. And those are great questions that people can think about. Or what's your sports psychology? How do you manage your psychology to perform at your top? And those are great questions for us to think about and think about, when do I perform best? How do I set up my day so that, you know, I am executing as best in my work, but also maybe in other parts of my life as well. And that might involve rest. It might involve, you know, like changing up, taking breaks, whatever it is for you. Those are things that we can always kind of be reflecting and experimenting with and thinking about.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by that. Question that I always like to ask, Eduardo, if you were interviewing you, what sort of question would you ask yourself?
Well, I mean, when if I were interviewing anybody, there'll be so many questions, because I do ask a lot of questions. But one one might come up is like, why is improvement important, or why is performance important in the first place? And, you know, to me, performance, and you alluded to this, it refers to whatever we care about. You know, of course, if we're in the field of sales, we're going to be caring about selling. We're hopefully selling a product or a service that's making an impact and helping people achieve their goals. And that's a sense of contribution. But it also applies to whatever we care about in our lives. And sometimes we get narrow focused, or a tunnel vision around what's easily quantifiable and what's more perhaps externally oriented around status or wealth. And those things are okay, but we often miss on things that we might care more about. And what I kind of encourage people to think about is, when you ask why you care about something like five times, what is the higher purpose that you care about most, and how can you get better at that? And in order to get better at that, we can't just be and do. We have to also be deliberate about getting better at that, whether it is happiness or relationship with our loved ones or our health or whatever it is. You know, think about, what are you doing, things that are helping you improve in the things that you most care about?
Yeah, that's an interesting subject. And as I told you just before the when we went live, I did an ultra marathon this year. It's the first time I did it. But I had a vision in my head when I was really struggling. And the vision was, I was climbing up the mountain, and it was on my way back, and it was really tough, and I had tears coming out my eyes. I just spoke to a lady on the way up, and she said, "You're right." I went, "No, I'm struggling." She went, "Sort yourself out." And she gave me an energy bar. And you know what? Bang, in a sudden bit of lightning, I had automatic energy to propel me forward. And I ran down the mountain, had 2 or 3K to go. But I imagined my kids being there at the end of it. And the fruition actually happened, because I imagined it and it came true. So when you start to think about performance, and when we start to think about the mindsets and turn it into action, how do you think about the visualization? Because I visualize all the time, and I'm quite a visual person. But how does that play part to when we speak about your performance paradox and turning that mindset into action? I'm really fascinated into that area, because I believe it to be true.
Yeah, well, first, you know, one thing that comes to mind is that energy is not limited. You know, we can actually expand our energy like you did in that run, and manage our psychology and manage our emotions. And visualization, you know, one thing that comes to me in mind around visualization is, with sales, one of the deliberate learning zone strategies that effective salespeople use is kind of like mental simulations around, you know, how might this conversation go and how do I want it to go, but also what questions might come up, so that I'm better prepared to answer questions and to guide people around the things that might come up in the conversation. So, you know, athletes visualize success, and it helps them kind of prepare for the performance. It helps them get into the right emotional state, and it is it's something, yeah, to and it also helps us kind of, again, put things in perspective and think about, you know, what is most important here and what are, like, for example, before a meeting, right? I like to take a minute just to think about who's going to be in this meeting, what's my top goal, how do I want to show up, right? And that, just that reflection before the meeting helps me not get into the trap of, for example, just trying to get into the tasks of doing the work rather than focusing on the people and helping people act in a teamwork, right? So those are ways that we can think about how do we manage our mind in order to affect our performance.
Yeah, and that is so true. But when you first start with an organization or a team of people, what are the first steps that you would work on? And I'm jumping around a bit here because I'm just getting loads and loads of questions in my head, and I have to ask them because I'm curious to know what your first steps might be when working with a team to get them from A to B to Z to wherever you need them to go.
Yeah.
But this is a new team and maybe the performance is dipping, but what are the key strategies that you might put into place with these teams to help them start to turn them around into performance or get in there? Because we are all always have to take bite-sized chunks. We can't take it all in one go.
Yes. So first, when I start working with teams or with leadership teams, the first step is to really understand the difference between learning and performance, right? And the need for us to be deliberate about improvement in order to improve our performance. So once people start like figuring out how they most people tend to be stuck in what I call chronic performance, just getting things done as best as they know how, trying to minimize mistakes. They're getting stuck because of that. And so the first step is for them to realize that, wow, we are just stuck in performance too much. And we have an opportunity here to change our systems and habits so that we can increase our performance. So that's the first step, is to identify the issue and then identify the challenges to work with that issue. Often the biggest challenges are first time. There's just a perception of there's too little time to get too much done. And so how are we going to do something else aside from just trying to sell, right? And second is fear, is what you talked about in terms of creating the social dynamics for us to be able to engage in the learning zone with each other. So we talk about those, both of those challenges and where to start, like you're saying, because we can't just, you know, we it's helpful to just identify where are we going to start in working on together, and then we can build from there. And that, so that involves conversations around, okay, like what are the systems and habits that we're using? And what's one thing that we want to start doing differently for us to get into the habit of the learning zone, right? And usually that's something that's quick and small and easy, but frequent. We want to engage in the learning zone frequently and easy because we don't know how to do it yet. So we need something that takes a little time and is easy. But every time we engage in it, it ignites the neurons that remind us of the importance of the learning zone of our intention to work at getting better. And so the more that those neurons fire together, the more they wire together, and we start thinking differently. We start realizing and just thinking about the learning zone more often every day. And that creates opportunities for us to then start working on new habits and new systems for us to be engaging in the learning zone more throughout the day. It affects kind of what we do, but also what we pay attention to, so that we can learn more from whatever comes up.
So typically, how long does it take? Like the 21 days to make a habit, we know that's you start, but you don't really have that habit yet until many things up to 66, that they say up to 66 days, but depends on the research that you read and depending on the type of person and whether they get the buy-in to want to do it and all of that. But from a blank sheet of a team or team leadership to an engaged team that's ready to experiment and feel good when the leader's got the buy-in and the CEO's got the buy-in, and then it goes down to the salespeople and so on and so forth. How long is that normal approach to getting them up to where they need to be going, but obviously you've got to start somewhere. But I'm just curious to know how long it might take people to do that on average, because everyone's different. You know that.
It does. It varies a lot. It often, the buy-in and the energy is immediate. Like when the intention, right? When people learn about this and they realize how they're stuck and what the solution is, they want to take action right away. But if that's where things end, then they'll revert back to their regular habits and no change will happen. And so then what really makes a big difference is just being really clear and about what the next step is and what the follow-up is going to be. And sometimes that can be something that's so easy and powerful that it can happen right away. Like, for example, a really easy habit change, if you want to change your conversations in weekly meetings, is simply change the agenda, right? You put something in the agenda that's about, okay, each week we're going to take 5 minutes or 10, 5 minutes to talk about what we've learned the prior week or what experiment we're going to make this week. So that's something that changes the habit right away, because you're already in the habit of following the agenda every week.
Yeah.
Now you're going to be changing the conversation every week. So that is immediate. And then from there, you can start building things into what you want to discuss and how you want to use that agenda, that conversation, in order to build other habits. Other habits, like, for example, the habit for people to solicit feedback all the time, that can be a lot harder and take more, even though it's a very, very powerful habit.
Yeah.
It can be harder for people to remember to solicit feedback. And so, but often some people in the team start doing it right away because they're more ready. They get it. They already didn't have a fear response to feedback, and they start doing it more. So when they do it, they can remind other people as well, and they can take longer. So it varies quite a bit. I would say most of the people by far, if not almost all, like 98% of people in the room are really excited to engage from day one. And then what habits and structures you set in place, and then having people who are kind of reminding each other on a regular basis, working together, that makes all the difference to actually make it into something that turns into a flywheel, something that is hard to get going at the beginning, but the more it gets going, the easier and easier it is to keep going and then to accelerate over time.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Something that I learned along the way is reflective journaling along the route, by questions to yourself, as long as you have some sort of structure. So you engage with the likes of yourself or me or whatever, and they do the workshops and they go away. But I always find if you engage with pen and paper and reflect on what you've learned, you're more engaged with it, so you can learn and grow to yourself, but then maybe you can learn and grow with other people as well. So from what I've seen and what I do anyway is reflect and journal and understand, and then I can just move forward.
I absolutely agree. And I think even like the most powerful is when you do that on a regular basis as a habit, because then you can put into those reflections whatever you want to work on, right? And so it's something that it's a habit that ensures that you're always proactively continuing to grow and change yourself. And that's what I encourage people to think about is, do you have a habit like that, you know, you're already in the habit, so the habit's really easy and automatic, but whatever you want to work on, you can insert into it and just remind yourself to work on it.
Oh, I've loved this conversation. I can carry on forever and a day, because it's just fascinating. And I trust the audience will find it equally as fascinating as what we have found it, and hope they get inspired, motivated, get that intrinsic motivation inside of them to actually look at things in a different point of view and different perspective. Just the last golden gem. What would you like to say to the audience today that will propel them forward and give them a golden nugget of knowledge that can inspire them? I'm always looking for that.
Yeah, me too. I would offer, in the lines of what we were just talking about, to think about what your morning habit is, the first thing that you do in the morning, because in the morning, we haven't been derailed. We haven't been you know, distracted with other things. And so how are you using that precious time? And is there something in there that reminds you of what you're working on, whether in your personal life or in your professional life? What are you working to improve and how? And is that something you're reminding of yourself every morning?
That is wonderful. Thank you so much. I put down below for the people in video land, they can see the link, but majority of people listen on podcast and Spotify and so on and so forth, iTunes and whatever. So where can they find your book?
Sure. The Performance Paradox, you can find at theperformanceparadox.com. You can actually read the whole first chapter at that website. And if you want to purchase the book, it's available wherever books are sold, you know, Amazon or any bookstore.
And where else can people find out more about yourself?
Yeah, my website is briceño.com. That's my last name, B-R-I-C-E-N-O.com. There, I have a monthly newsletter and a download for 5 tips to build a growth mindset.
Awesome. I will be looking at that and stealing that for my own use. And I thank you so much for coming on the show. I could probably bring you back in maybe in the new year and we can have an extra talk. I'd love that because I'm fascinated by the work that you do and how you adapt it into organizations and especially salespeople and so on and so forth. So I thank you once again.
Thank you, Dave.
Everyone else, you've been listening to the Global Sales Leader podcast. Every week, I speak with insightful, curious, intelligent, smart people from a different point of view, giving that added value forward. And Eduardo, you certainly have done that today. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Jason, for all you do, and have a great next ultra marathon.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Global Sales Leader podcast and deepest gratitude from Eduardo for sharing his profound insights into the dynamic world of sales, growth mindset, high performance. We hope the listeners found it inspirational, actionable strategies to elevate their sales teams to new heights. If you have any questions, comments or topics that you'd like us to speak about in future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach me at jasoncooper.io or jcooper@jasoncooper.io. Please stay connected with all of these episodes. Every episode is different. We push through the realms and look around the areas of sales psychology, behavior analysts, body language, linguistics, and so much more. Love to connect with you to find out more about what you do as a high performance coach and high performance trainer within the areas and realms of sales. I love to be speaking with new people and new teams, how I can add value to your bottom line.